Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information to expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers. Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray. Tonight, we've got Andy. Andy, how you doing, man?
Hey, AJ. I'm good, man. Feel good. Life is good. A lot of good stuff going on. Happy to be here.
No hot water heaters breaking this week.
No chaos lately. Things are nice.
Knock on wood, right?
Yeah. I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing really well. Things are going well at work. Things are going well at home. I will tell you that for the first time in a very long time, my wife and I got a chance to escape this past weekend from the kids.
Like an actual date?
Yeah. Ooh. It was great. It was really great. It was nice to, you know, not be around the kids for a weekend, just like be adults.
You got rid of them for a weekend?
Yeah. My mom watched
them. Dude, that's not a date. That's like
I know.
Wow.
That was a getaway. It's like virtual reality, but
good
like
for you. Real. Did you guys go away? You stayed somewhere, right?
Yeah. We stayed local. You know, because I travel so much, I have like a crap ton of hotel points. And so we booked a couple of hotels and it was a ton of fun.
A little bit
Hit
of
up
normalcy,
a bunch of breweries,
right?
Bunch of restaurants, did some shopping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were going to do some hiking, but the weather did not favor it. It's like winter snuck back in on us.
Good for you, man. I can't wait to do that. I'm going to get out with my wife soon. At the very least, just go out to dinner.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, enough about us. Before we introduce our guest tonight, we have a bunch of wins to celebrate, including some for the podcast, which I will gladly get to here in a second. Starting us off, Steel Network scored a new job as a cloud network engineer.
Ooh.
Nice.
Cloud.
Andy, not Mr. Laptef.
I have no wins. I haven't had a win since this podcast started.
No wins yet.
This podcast is my win.
Yes, it is. So Andy in the Discord passed his Ansari exam. So that's the advanced enterprise routing or advanced routing and services.
I
forget exactly what all is. Right. Yeah. That's like the modern day T-shirt exam, I think.
I'm taking design as my second exam because I don't want to take an RC.
I'm going to do an RC someday.
But, yeah.
Chris, our favorite butcher turned network engineer, back on the board. He got accepted as a permanent U.S. resident.
Yeah.
So first step in full citizenship. And he also got the Rookie of the Year award from the Cisco Learning Network
community. Wow.
Yeah.
He's on fire.
Yeah, he is. He's having a good year. Dan, otherwise known as DevNet Dan, passed his DevNet Core. So the Dev Core. So he went for the trifecta, right? He did Encore, and then he did an auto. So he got his CCNP Enterprise, and then he went for the Dev Core. So he's got two professional level certifications now. He's got the DevNet Professional and the CCNP Professional.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So congratulations, Dan. Network Charles. Network Charles scored a position as a wireless field engineer for a five-month internship at a wireless ISP.
Very cool.
Yeah. NetDev2 started a new position as a network DevOps engineer.
Wow.
Big props to him. And last but not least, Ology, as they go by in the Discord, scored a new position as a network support engineer as a Palo Alto specialist.
Ooh, security.
Yeah. Palo Alto's getting big these days.
Is that all the wins?
That is all the wins. That's all the member wins.
May I offer a collective goat scream?
I think you have to.
The goat has screamed. Congratulations, everybody.
So I'm going to throw it out there. We hit 63,000 downloads maybe by the end of this podcast, we will have hit 64,000 downloads. So a big thank you to all of our listeners and fans out there for making that happen. We're less than 10 months in.
It's humbling.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah. I will drop just a teaser. Ooh. We've scored our first sponsor. Crazy, huh?
That is, yes. Yeah. That's really, and it's exciting what they have in mind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's super exciting that, you know, they genuinely just want to help out the community. You know, it's not just about like dollars or getting the name out there. In fact, they've outrightly said, like, we don't really care that you mention our name. You know, they just want to help out the community. So they are going to sponsor an episode and do an episode with us. And then we got some other goodies in store from them. So we'll share that all in due time.
And you're always so transparent, AJ. So in full transparency, just from my own perspective, I had some trepidation, you know, as we've talked about, like, how are we going to align ourselves with a sponsor or accept a sponsorship and not, you know, compromise what we've been able to do up to this point. We don't want to pivot and say, and here's an hour of talking about a vendor. Like, you know, it just wasn't something we wanted to do. And when we started that call with them, when they led it off with like, listen, we see what you guys are doing in the community and how much you're helping people. And we just want to help you help people. I like just breathed a big sigh of relief. Like, oh, good. Cause I was kind of nervous.
On the same page.
Yeah. That was a pleasant surprise. I don't know what I expected, but it's going to be good for the community. Yeah. So yeah, nice teaser.
Absolutely.
Man.
Excellent. All right. I am very excited for our guest this evening. So without further ado, we've got Bo. Bo, how you doing?
Doing great, man.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So I guess we'll kick it right off. So Bo here has a connection with Andy. Andy, do you want to kind of elaborate on the story, go back a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Share with the folks how you met Bo here.
Absolutely. So I had a stack of home gear, you know, Cisco routers and switches, pissing my wife off in the garage. And, you know, and I virtualize my lab and I do most of my stuff in Eve on a server, but I still have physical gear downstairs. So I you know, years ago, I thought, you know, let me sell this stuff, right? Hey, I'll sell some gear and I'll get to buy something. But then the more I thought of it and the more we got involved in the community and the podcast and the Discord and all, I thought, you know what? You know, I don't need a couple $100, like really, like it's not going to change my life. And maybe we find somebody that, you know, it could help. So, I think it was a YouTube video and I put it out there and I advertised it all over the place. So Bo, I asked people to send me videos or, you know, I said, listen, I don't want to do a random giveaway. I don't want just to go to some, you know, because I wanted it to fill a need for somebody, not just, this will be a fun hobby. Like, no, I want a true need. And the random giveaways, it's kind of hard to do that. It just, you know, you push a button to pick somebody and you have no idea what you're going to get. So anyway, got a lot of submissions in various social media. Bo found me, I guess I'll let him tell the story, but long and short of it, Bo submitted a video and out of the, I don't know if it was dozens or, you know, close to 100, it was a lot to go through all the submissions, but Bo's submission just grabbed me right from the, you know, right from the top. Very sincere. He started off with like, listen, if I were in your shoes, one of my concerns would be like, oh, somebody just going to grab this and, you know, turn it around on eBay. Right. Like,
right.
And he started explaining his position to me and what had happened to him recently as a result of, you know, what's been going on with COVID. And I just really, I thought, wow, like this is exactly who I was hoping, you know, would come out. It, you know, with this giveaway. So, you know, I can shut up from there and give it to Bo on the rest of the story, but it's kind of how we found each other.
All right. So Bo, before we go way back, how'd you find Andy?
Our home lab.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, our home lab on Reddit.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I think I had just like found that, very recently, and then saw Andy's post in there. I follow like maybe 4 Reddit pages or something, and saw Andy's post and went to the YouTube and everything. Yep.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. So, what were you doing on our home lab?
I was just starting to kind of dip my toes into learning IT really at that point. And,
okay.
Yeah. You know, certainly didn't have anything that could be considered like a home lab or anything, but, you know, learning, trying to figure out where everybody's at, talking about that kind of stuff. And that was one of the things I came across.
Okay, so maybe, cool. Maybe we should go back in time and then circle back to this. Cause I hate to spoil
That's true. I was just thinking maybe we should start out, you know, where are you approximately located and what are you doing now? And, you know, we'll get going with the what did you do?
Sure. So currently sitting in Atlanta. I've lived here for a few years now. For the past decade plus, I've made a career out of working in live entertainment as an audio engineer. I've had full-time jobs for companies and the bulk of that, though, I worked as an independent, both for bands and for sound companies across the country. And that entire industry just got shut down overnight pretty much.
Yeah.
A little over a year ago. And so when that happened, it wasn't like, oh, okay, you know, my job's gone for at least another year or 2 years or something. It was like nobody knew what to expect. So just kind of hunkered down, and after a few months, it was like, okay, this is, you know, certainly not what I'm used to, and certainly not sustainable. Right. So it's time to start learning something else. And like, I think the first thing I went to was like Python. Like, okay, I can just learn to code really quick, and you know, have some job.
How'd that go for you?
Quick burnout. You know, I'm glad I did it. Yeah. It's certainly, you know, been good to know. And, but it was definitely painful. But
so after like a month or two, it was pretty clear like this isn't going to be like a couple week or couple month thing. Like this is,
you know, I think it actually went longer than that. I think the first couple months was like, okay, this will be over soon, and then like a couple months more, it's like, oh, okay, I'll just, you know, get in shape, you know, until this comes back, you know, start doing home exercise and stuff. And then it was like, I think at like 6 months, it was like, oh man.
Now as an audio engineer in like live entertainment, I mean. Yeah, I was going to joke earlier and say like, "What were you spinning records at, like the, you know, the strip club or something?" But like, let's get based on like, you know, how big of a, what industry were you in? Were you working with big acts, little acts, local, international? I mean, how big of a deal are you in the audio world?
Oh, come on, well, certainly not a big deal, but yeah, it started. My first job was like sweeping a floor at a warehouse in New Orleans, you know, and that was when I think I was 19 years old, and that quickly got into like mixing shows, local shows in New Orleans. I found out about audio engineering for the corporate world, you know, these big like corporate events that are held in convention centers and hotel ballrooms and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I think I did that kind of scene in New Orleans for about 5 years. And then from like 2015 to, you know, 2020, was touring. So that was all, you know, at least club level touring. With artists, and then, you know, after a couple years of that, was moved into like arena level touring, and yeah, so, you know, 16,000 person venues in different cities, still doing big corporate events sometimes for some of these sound companies, but yeah, you know, went from, I think some of the recognizable names I'd have on my resume be Avril Lavigne was the last tour that was the tour that never happened. You know, I finished rehearsals with her last year, and that's when everything stopped. Before that, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, for those unfamiliar. And then J. Cole, I don't know if you guys follow any of the hip-hop rap stuff, but he did pretty well. And Troye Sivan is an Australian pop singer I worked for a while.
And did you get to travel the world? Like, did you get around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think in 2018 and 2019, did something close to like 30 countries.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
What a gig. How do you go from like local clubs to the arenas? Is that based on skill level? Like the more experience you get kind of moved up the ranks?
The skill is definitely a requirement, I think, most of the time. But beyond that, just luck and connections, you know, do a good job. Don't piss people off, and you know, hopefully somebody you've worked with will call you. Yeah.
Are you a musician? I mean, how does one find a passion for audio engineering?
Certainly not anymore, but yeah, as like a young teenager, like 13, 14, I started playing bass. I think that's when the gear interest and sort of addiction kicked in, you know, buying amps and pedals and stuff from the local music store. That's when you start to learn it, and took off from there.
Yeah, I met a few audio engineers in my life, and they all seemed to be musicians who had a need to figure out, you know, how to record. And yeah,
totally.
Very cool.
So what does an audio engineer do? If you could just give, you know, us, you know, me in particular, but I'm sure some people in our audience have some questions about what does an audio engineer do?
Sure. So there's, you know, as with most things, a lot of roles encompassed in that title. What I did mostly as an audio engineer, especially in the touring realm, was monitor engineering, which, so basically if you go to any sizable concert, there's one engineer who will mix the show for the audience, which is everything that you'd hear wherever you're sitting out there. And then there's another engineer on stage who mixes all of the live inputs and tracks and everything for the artist on stage. And basically, you know, if they have any request where they need to hear something louder or quieter, you know, that's what you're there for.
And obviously we don't want to get super deep into like an art of audio engineering podcast, but when you when you say mix, so you're just talking about levels, like how loud the drums are as opposed to the guitar and the vocals and all that, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that way when like the main lead singer or whatever isn't like drowning out with just like drums or whatever, and they're getting a little bit of everything.
Right. Yeah. Just to sort of sum that position up, it's basically like the band's happiness on stage is your responsibility.
Ah. Yeah. That's kind of a big role. I mean, for the most part, like the audience just wants it like loud, right? Like just crank it up to 10.
Yeah.
And I never knew that there were two different boards or like sound engineers, audio engineers, like one for the band for what they hear in their ears. And then one for the, I just figured it was, everybody was hearing the same thing. Like they're different mixes, right? It's not, the audience isn't hearing the same thing that like the guitarist is, right?
No, definitely not. And even within that, it's different mixes for each artist on stage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Jeez. So you got a lot going on.
Yeah, at times. Yeah.
Was there any networking involved?
There absolutely was. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, on stage, it was a little bit less, but and when I do the occasional like systems tech role, which is that's the person who's responsible for usually designing and deploying really the speakers into whatever venue you're in, that's more networking heavy. And it seems to be getting more and more so. At monitors, it's more just like all of your devices, like you have wireless transmitters that transmit to the wireless receivers that the artists use at their position. And sometimes you can have a lot of those and a lot of wireless microphones. And with all the different settings, the easiest way to sort of manage that is to have it all networked together and control it all from a laptop or something. Hmm. And so that was sort of like, you know, an introduction into networking at that point. It's like, you know, I came here to do sound, but, you know, now I'm plugging in Ethernet cables and I don't really know, you know, how this works. So I got to figure it out.
So do all those wireless transmitters, so like back in the day, right, like the guitarist had a cord that went in his guitar and the microphones had cords and like all that. So I guess it's the trend has gone toward wireless, right? The guitarist can dance around, doesn't have a wire, there's a transmitter.
Sure. It's so, certainly gotten more popular.
Is there a receiver on the other end that, or like a controller that takes in all those wireless signals? And then, I mean, that's the network part, I guess, right? Is it kind of concentrates all those different wireless devices?
Well, actually, that would fall more under like just the wireless or radio frequency management. The networking part would actually be like that receiver that you're talking about. It could have a lot of different settings as far as EQ, volume, adjusting the frequency on it. And that unit will actually have an Ethernet port and require an IP address to access it from whatever software, you know.
So that when you're at the board and you have to control stuff, you're talking to it via IP.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Huh.
And in like systems tech roles and front of house roles, it goes well beyond that to where all of the individual amplifiers for all the speakers similarly require like network control.
Oh, wow.
And it's even gotten to the point now where they're using audio over IP for like, you know, 64 to 128 channel flows from like computers to consoles, console to console.
So it used to be, this is all the stuff that used to be those big snakes of cables, right? From the stage to the board.
Now it's fiber.
Really?
No kidding.
Huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got thrown into that a bit in that one role, right? Some networking.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's where the interest was peaked.
Huh.
I had no idea. I didn't realize all that stuff was IP based.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. It absolutely makes sense now. But so a role that I had about 10 years ago, I used to do help desk for a high school, and it was like dual, you know, part help desk, but then I would also do the AV stuff for the entire school district. So we would like set up sound and lights for various shows, whether it's, you know, elementary school, high school, whatever. And so we dabbled in a little bit of like, you know, the AV stuff. But of course, it's a school district. Everything was SLR. Nothing was IP based. Mm-hmm. Or you know, whatever the connectors were for the lighting stuff. But I mean, it, you know, it's kind of surprising to hear, but at the same time, not so surprising that everything's IP based these days.
Right.
Especially on a higher end show.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't realize that. What, who calls you to tell you like, hey, the world's shutting down and our industry has is like disintegrated?
Oh man. So when that, you know, moment came, I think that we had like a 2 week or 1 week rehearsal in LA for an international tour. This was with Avril, and it would have put us in Europe like in April, and then all over Asia for a couple months after that or something. And so rehearsals finished and the world was still fine. The tour was still planned. And I think 2 days after getting home, I got the email like, tour is canceled, and you know, haven't gotten a call from that industry for work since.
Wow.
Just like that.
And you were working in the industry for how long? 10, 15 years?
Over 10 years, yeah.
Okay, so a decade in the industry, and then one day, that's it. It's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
did you see it coming at all? Like, I kind of feel like before all heck broke loose in all of our worlds, like, there was kind of this, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks of, like, something going on. Did you see that thing in the news? Like, at least here, it seemed like something was coming, but, you know, we had no idea what we were in for. Like, did you have any indication that this could happen to your industry, or you just got that call and you're like, what the hell just happened?
No, it was definitely, you know, I think even as far back as January, I was on a job in Miami and I was like checking the news and it's like, this doesn't seem like it's going to go well, yeah. You know? And then, while we were in rehearsals, I think like Milan or some city, you know, put the kibosh on live shows. And so one show from the tour got canceled while we were in rehearsals. And so it was sort of like, you know, the Harbinger or whatever. It's like, okay, this is, yeah.
So was there like a period of like, WTF am I going to do? Like how... Because I know there's been a lot of industries. I used to be in food service. Like in college, I waited tables for 5 years. Yes, I was in college for 5 years. And, you know, I've thought of those people just as an example when this all hit. Like, they can't work anymore. Restaurants are shut down. Like, so, you know, when I met you, I was like, oh, wow. Like, there's an industry I didn't even think of. And going to live shows used to be my favorite thing in the world to do. And it just never occurred to me, like, oh, yeah, there's a whole industry of people. I wasn't so worried about the billionaire, you know, performers, like, oh, they'll be fine. They'll sit on their yacht, you know, until this blows over. But so many people like yourself, I guess, who there's a lot of supporting personnel for all those live shows, right? Like a lot of people lost their jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stagehands, catering, bus drivers, warehouse workers. I mean, there's even, you know, the companies themselves, the sound companies and light companies that, you know, may or may not have all their gear paid off and that are operating on like pretty high levels of cash flow that all of a sudden it just is gone, you know? Yeah, a lot of people, and that's kind of, I have to remind myself that sometimes because it's, you know, so humbling to go from like working all the time at a job that you feel is like going really well to all of a sudden like just, you know, basically being unemployable and unable to find a job. So it's like, and I remember that there's like thousands and thousands of people in the country and around the world in the same position as me. It's like, yeah.
So did you sit for a while just like panicked, anxious, depressed? Or, you know, how long did it take for you to like be like, all right, I think I need to develop a different skill set here and, you know, and try to pivot?
Yeah. I mean, at first, I would say actually the anger and depression kind of came later. At first, it was like, you know, no big deal. I got savings for this. Gonna be fine.
And you didn't know how long it was gonna last too, right? Like it might not be
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Still don't, you know.
Right, right. Like, oh, this could be a vacation, right? Maybe it'll blow over and I'll
Yep. And then you know, as you go months without working and the savings account starts to take a hit, it's like, okay. And like, yeah, I think it was months into it when I decided like So it was kind of like a switch there too. It was like, okay, I'm going to learn to code and get a job, you know, just whatever it takes, I'm going to do it.
How long did you mess with coding?
I think I did like a month. I did some college course online. That was like a semester course, and I just squished it down and just kind of did it all at home. And
how did that go? Did you get it? Did it make sense?
I did. It made sense. I think a lot of the like assignments and stuff were just really painful. Like they really made you just like think harder than you feel like thinking sometimes, I guess. I don't know how else to put it. It's just,
was it Python, was it, you said?
I like a Python. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Huh. Can you teach me Python?
Unlikely. It's a dark corner of my mind now.
That's going to be a very useful skill for you someday when you get a networking gig.
Yeah.
So when did you decide on networking? I mean, did it have anything to do with like, did you like networking when you had those jobs in audio?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, while I was still working those jobs is when I first found out about Udemy and found the first CompTIA course or something about networking. And I watched a couple of videos on like long flights, but didn't really prioritize it. And didn't really have a lot of time for it, honestly. But after, the month of Python was when I started trying to apply for jobs online. You find all the like job boards and all that stuff. And that's when I realized that like certifications were a thing. You know, it's funny listening to you guys' podcast and hearing all these guys with just like these long lists of certifications. And like last year I just found out they existed, you know. But it was at that point.
So you were applying for jobs, and did you see that they had certifications you didn't have? Is that kind of when it came top of mind?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, what are these letters? What do they mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Amongst, all the different skill sets that were required that it was like, I have no idea what this means.
But, yeah.
Applying for jobs, just hitting the job market super hard and like not getting responses. And it's like, okay, well, I'll take some time and get,
So were you like trying to apply to like software developer jobs? Were you trying to do networking jobs back then, or?
I think I didn't realize help desk was a thing at the time. So I was just applying to anything that had like IT in the title.
Yeah.
I knew to stay away from the ones that had the salary of like 100K plus. So I won't waste anybody's time here, but yeah. Yeah. Yep. And it's kind of been like that since then. I guess that was maybe in August or so that I started really kind of getting into all this. And it was like I got the CompTIA A+ certification and then, started applying again. Still no job. So it's like, okay, maybe one more cert and then, I'll hear back. And
So when you realized certifications were a thing, how did you land on like which one to go first?
Well, that is something Andy and I talked about when we first met, actually. So I think the CCNA was like the common one that I saw all over the place, but being so new and so illiterate to everything IT and like that whole job world, I went to the CCNA website and it was just like, I couldn't make sense of, the whole structure or the requirements and it also looked expensive, it was a lot of the different stuff that they wanted you to buy or anything else,
I mean, a lot of that training's expensive. Like when you go on Cisco's site and look, like, hey, here's a $3,000 video training series you can use. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
I was pretty off put by, that, but I had remembered the CompTIA stuff from when I had downloaded like a Udemy course a couple years ago. And I looked at that and they make it all pretty simple, start here at A+ and follow the tree,
Yeah, and that's common, right? You kind of hear that, like you start with hardware, right? Is that A+? Like hardware and then networking.
Yep.
And it's kind of a good, I was talking about earlier and said, like, I almost wish I had done what you did, that path, instead of just jumping, feet first into CCNA, not really with any networking background at all, and just failing the hell out of that test. I think some A+ and NetPlus would have done me well, to at least build a foundation. Because
it's a good foundation.
Yeah, because everybody has a different starting point, Like the person who's 10 years as a network engineer going for the CCNA is going to be in a lot better position than the cable guy climbing the ladder or the audio engineer who needs to pivot. Like, what is all this?
I haven't looked at an A+ syllabus in a long time, but back when I did look at it when I was in college, it was like hardware, and I think they went over stuff like this is a trouble ticket, and here's some troubleshooting skills, and you know, here's some customer service skills even.
It's good, like help desk cert, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So you saw the job postings, people kept blowing you off. You started to get certs. You got your A plus first, interviewed some more, still nothing.
Yep.
And you said, okay, let me work my way up the stack here and look at Net Plus.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
How is that? How is Net Plus? Is it tough? Well, is it a lot of material?
I think the easiest way to sum it up is just tell you how long it took me, which was like 3 weeks.
Okay.
Which really gave me a false impression on what this whole certification game is all about. CCNA time. I'll knock it out in a month or two. Not so much.
You haven't knocked the CCNA out yet, Abby?
No, man. Working on it. Working on it.
But now, so to put some perspective on that, that was 3 weeks of you studying like 40 hours a week, 20 hours a week, 30 hours a week.
No, it might have been a couple more weeks than that, but it was definitely less than 2 months. But yeah. It was maybe 3 hours a day or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A couple days off here and there, you know?
Yeah. Any labbing? Did you have at that point anything to practice on? Did they come with like simulators?
So at that point, I wasn't doing any simulators. The whole like network virtualization thing, I didn't have a clue about, but I had bought like a couple small, the little Raspberry Pi things just to have another computer to like try to make a connection with and learn like basic file share stuff, you know. And that was about the extent of it, really.
That's really smart. I don't have a Raspberry Pi, but I've heard people are doing so many things with them. And
they're fun.
And they're so affordable, right? Like, what are they, like 20, 30 bucks? I don't even know. They're super inexpensive, right?
I mean, you can get them that are like 60, 70 bucks, but like that for even for a tiny computer, that's pretty power packed, right?
Yeah.
You can do quite a bit with it.
That's amazing. So you got a couple of those, you try to get them to talk to each other, you learn some stuff, file shares, right?
Yeah, and those have been really helpful with learning Linux too, which I didn't know anything about. But
oh my God, you know Linux too? Now you got to teach me that.
Oh, come on. Get a pie, man. Those are baby steps.
So you got the A+, you got the N+. At what point did you meet Andy and get the home lab?
Right. So I think I was probably halfway through or maybe just finishing up the Net Plus studying. And it was like getting close to Christmas break or something. And, time to go see family or whatever. But that was when I saw Andy's post. And I just reached out to him. I think that day I just recorded a quick video, showed him my little setup with the computers and told him what was going on with me. I had lost my job and was working on, pursuing networking jobs. And I think he got back to me a couple weeks after that. And at that point, I don't even think I realized what it was that he was offering. I think it was just like, here's somebody who knows some stuff. And like, he's got some stuff that's going to help me learn, So I was like, yeah, sure, sign me up. And so he called me one day. We got on a Google Meet or something. And he was like, hey, man, I'm going to give this to you. I was like, all right, what is this? <He's> like, I've got these routers and switches. I was like, all right, great. And they showed up. And sure enough, routers and switches that I think at the time, when I received that stuff, like I had no clue what a router did other than like, even having studied the Net Plus, I had a very basic idea of it. And the switches, layer 3 switch, I had no idea what that was, so I didn't realize it was what he had sent me. But since then, they get a lot of use. They're plugged in. I've got everything on a power strip. And I'd say I'm probably like 50-50 between the hardware and packet tracer and stuff when I'm studying during the day.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, AJ. My memory is awful. You helped me, correct? I needed some switches, and you do needed some switches. I wanted to give you credit where it's due.
But yeah, you thought you had 3 switches, and you only had one or whatever. And I checked in a couple.
Yeah, AJ kicked in a couple switches, which I was really appreciative of. I was just going to grab some off eBay and ship them out. And AJ was like, "Dude, I got you."
Yeah, yeah,
nice.
Thanks, buddy.
I got gear.
Nice. Yeah, thank you guys both very much.
Oh man,
I'm a moment to say that.
Absolutely, man. This is what we're here for. So you were studying for Net Plus, and I mean, why did you go? Did you know that Cisco was a thing and like the CCNA? Did you have a plan? Did you know that CCNA was in your future, that you'd have to get your CCNA to get a job? Or did that just seem like a natural progression? Like, oh, A+, Net Plus, Cisco's a thing. Maybe I'll do that next.
Yeah. And I still don't have like a super great grasp on like the Cisco certification like progression, but I believe there was something before the CCNA.
Used to be, I think.
Before talking to you, I was like, okay, after I do Net Plus, I'll try to start at the bottom with Cisco. But then talking to you, and you actually, for anybody that doesn't know, Andy actually also hooked me up with the official cert guide, which has been majorly helpful for a lot of reasons. So once that came in and I dove into it, I was like, okay, this is like the perfect follow-up to the Net Plus. They're reviewing a lot of the stuff that I was kind of only introduced to in depth, and it's it's the next move. So
that's like two books, right? Is it like,
yeah. Yep.
Don't you love Cisco press books? I mean, they're weapons. You could take somebody out with that thing.
Super intimidating. Yeah.
So what you were referring to was the CSENT. So that was the Enterprise Network Technician, I think it was. And that was when they broke the CCNA into two different parts. There was like the 200-125 and the 200-225 or something like that. I did my CCNA in 2018, and I had taken the full CCNA a few times, didn't pass it, and then I had the full CCNA scheduled. I was going to Cisco Live. There's a free shot exam when you go to Cisco Live. So I was going to take the CCNA again. They're like, no, you can't do that. You already got it scheduled. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll take the CSENT. So I took the CSENT and I passed it.
Nice.
Apparently you can still do the CSENT if you're associated with a Cisco Network Academy, but I believe they're going to like fully expire that here in the next year. But if you're not tied to a Cisco Network Academy, then, the entry level is the new 200-301, full CCNA.
So interesting. So, Bo, is your goal to get your CCNA and then start applying again? Right, like that's the pattern so far, right? Let me get a cert, see if I can get a job. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
How are you finding the? Personally, I find those cert guides, you know, they're a little dry, right? There's a lot of technical data. It's not like a novel that pulls you along with an interesting plot, like, you know, and here's spanning tree and here's OSPF, and it's so how are you getting along through the book? I mean, do you struggle with motivation? Like me personally, I haven't studied in a month. I was in a really good clip, and then I got a cold, and then I just stopped, and now I'm trying to get back in. Like, do you have a good kind of, what's your study habit like, I guess is what I'm trying to ask you. How do you study?
It could be better, but at the same time, I'm trying not to rush this one. I definitely crammed those first two certifications, and it was like, you know, when you're doing that, like, I'm probably not going to retain a ton of this, right? Like, I'm memorizing answers to questions to take a test, which I'm trying not to do on this one because I can tell that the material is really high quality. It's building block knowledge, which I believe to be important in any field, like the foundations of whatever it is you're doing. But as far as my experience with the books go, yeah, they were super intimidating at first, just, you know, big technical books. But it's actually been pretty relieving to go through it, and it's like, oh, okay, the first like 45 pages are just explaining the book, and every chapter has like 3 or 4 pages that are questions or review or something. But yeah, as far as how I'm going through it, I'd say, I don't have like a set pace. It's more just like how the material sits with me. If it's something that I kind of already have a grasp on, I can breeze through it. But when I first got to like OSPF, it was like, okay, this I need to take some time with. And it's like every time they, you know, mention a new command, I don't know, I either go to the hardware or packet tracer, I'm like testing out the command, you know, and every time they're, you know, introducing some new idea, I try to lab it once, if not more than once.
So you are labbing. That was my follow-up question, is because there's, you know, in the whatever year we've been doing this, there seems to be a lot of different ways people study. And
yeah,
it seems like most of us, we read the book, maybe watch videos, lab. The some of the biggest nuggets I think we got from Peter Brown, you know, from Make It Stick, like you had said, you were just, you know, trying to memorize stuff to take the test. And for me, I've done that too in the past. And then it doesn't stick in long term. And the problem is I have this job and then I'm working with OSPF and I'm like, I don't remember stuff. So like, do you do anything with like flashcards or I've tried to like pick up some tricks on how I can get this in the long term. Cause forgetting, like what are you looking at? Like 900 pages between those two books, right? Like, whatever. whatever it is. It's big, right? It's
more than that. I think it's closer to probably like 1400 or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So how, like, the challenge for me has always been studying this stuff is, how do you remember, you know, pages 50 to 100 when you're at page 1300 at the end? So
that just, is the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just floating that out there for you as a little, like, I've heard from a lot of people that using flashcards, there's free, like, what's it called, AJ? I forget the Anki, Anki, right, okay, whatever, yeah. Before you get so far down the path that you've forgotten 40% of what you've read, you might want to consider flashcards, just because I wish somebody had told me, you know, early on that by using them, it's spaced repetition and it helps keep it top of mind.
Yeah.
Because by the time
review you review an old topic, learn a new topic, review an old topic, learn a new topic.
Now,
AJ, you do the flashcards as well?
Yeah. Yeah. That has been a game changer for me. So I started the flashcards. Was it during my CCMP or after my CCMP? I think it was when I was doing the Juniper stuff. I started doing the flashcards, and that's been a game changer for me, because that, like, doing the flashcards helped me really breeze through the Juniper certs I did and the DevNet Associate. Like, that was really, really, really helpful.
So did you see what just happened there? He just kind of casually mentioned, like, not only does he have a CCMP, not only did he get 5 Juniper certs in 5 months, but he also got his DevNet Associate. So I lovingly say this. I'm not teasing him, because what I try to do is stick with the winners. Like, whatever he's doing, you know, if he's doing flashcards, I'm doing flashcards, because
there was also a period where getting certifications was my job, because like when COVID first hit, we had the opposite problem. You know, the IT industry did not get shut down. We got a crap ton of work thrown our way unexpectedly. And so there was like a period of like 2 or 3 months where I was working a ton of time. I would say overtime, but I wasn't compensated for more than 40 hours a week because I'm salaried. So it wasn't exactly overtime. But then, like, after June or July, I had some projects here and there. I wouldn't say I wasn't working on any projects, but it was nothing compared to the first half of the year. And so there was at least 20, sometimes 30 hours a week where I was studying. So yes, the flashcards helped, but also, like, I had the time to commit to it, where I would study for most of the day, and then I would still spend time with my family and relax and hang out. So it was a really good, you know, balance. I didn't have to, like, try to find the time. You know, like, I have not cracked a book since January, you know, and I have no intention of cracking a book, because I'm working on a huge project right now that's not going to let me do that.
And he's got all the certs, so
let's see, cracks the books, man.
another good trick that just popped in my head, not that we're trying to tell you how to study, but because you're studying for the CCNA, Aaron had always espoused this, and then Peter Brown reinforced it, but doing the "Do I know this already?" So you had mentioned like those questions, doing those and the end of chapter tests. I think basically taking those tests before you read the chapter, it primes your brain to then recognize that material when you read it. It's so counterintuitive, a lot of the stuff. Like, let me take the test before I read the material. But I started to do that. And then I would look at the question ahead of time, not exactly know it. And then when I saw it in that chapter, that's what they're looking at. Kind of like a lot of these little hacks to try to get it, you know, to stick in your head.
Right.
Since studying,
are you using any other resources? So you got books. I know you mentioned Udemy, but maybe you're not doing that for CCNA. Like, what are you using to help get you through this?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Are you using any additional resources? So you have a lab. You're using Packet Tracer. You've got the book that Andy sent you. Are you using anything else to study?
I mean, this, as you guys probably know, the Cisco cert guides, they come with like the companion website.
Yep.
That has you know, all the questions that are in the book. I go online for that. I just do. And they also have like all kinds of different videos and like even other websites with labs and stuff on it. But I would say mostly what I've just sort of honed in on is the book actually even comes with on the website like flashcards there, which I've heard about that before. I looked at it. It's just like, yes, so many. I might come back to them, you know, a little closer to test time. But maybe I should heed you guys' warning and pick up on it now. But no, what I've really just kind of honed in on is like the questions at the end of the chapters and at the end of the sections, and then just labbing the hell out of everything. You know, if I can think of 3 or 4 different scenarios to test a concept on and just like make it work on the hardware, you know.
So are you going to watch?
Feel comfortable about it.
Are you going to watch videos? And I only ask because I think you might have the Udemy Chris Bryant CCNA bootcamp. So is
I
that,
do.
Is that something that you think you'll use? I'm only asking because I kind of have a, like a love-hate relationship with videos. When I watch when I watch a lot of video series, it's easy. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. when I'm passively watching, it's like, oh, and then I get this. Again, there's another term for it for make it stick, but I get this like illusion of competence, I think it was called. Where like, I know exactly. that. Well, just because Chris Bryant, the CCIE guy, did it, I feel like I know it. But then when I sit for the test, I'm like, oh, crap. I don't remember that LSA and OSPF. So it seems like trying to leverage video content, I don't know if it's different for everybody. It has its place, but I still haven't figured out that balance of like, where do you do that? Do you do it along with the reading and the labbing? Do you do it at the end to, I mean, AJ, I don't know if you have any, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I don't exactly know where video fits for like successful certification people like AJ. I mean, where do you, how do you utilize video training?
For me, I do video almost like a Dicka, right? Like it's a primer. Like okay. It's something that, first. You know, I do sit and watch it, but it's, even though I'm watching it and engaging it, it's still kind of a passive way to learn something.
Yeah. Hmm. Earlier is like you might watch an OSPF video thing right. before you read the chapter.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting. I kind of had like the reverse mentality of it where I didn't want to watch the video series and sort of get understanding and then go through the book and feel like, I think I already know this and kind of used to it. I went for the book first and tried to like really soaking it in. And since videos are easier to watch than reading, I figured I'd just like kind of use that to review at the end of the books. But,
right. And there's, yeah. I don't think there's a wrong way. I mean, you're consuming the content and.
I treat the videos almost like a podcast, right? Like it's something that I put on, it's background noise. I listen to it. Sometimes I'll like watch the video, especially if somebody's like labbing something. But my study time tends to be in the evening. And so, you know, I'll listen to the video throughout the day and then study, really study, read, do some labbing in the evening.
I wanted to ask you about labbing, Bo. You mentioned that you use Packet Tracer and the gear, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten beat up over time about, you know, hey man, nobody needs physical gear.
Here we go.
Well, no. So, well, you're a perfect use case. You're studying for the CCNA. You use emulated and real environment. So, do you notice a difference? Does it not really seem to matter? Like, as long as you're getting the keyboard, you know, time in and running through the commands. Do you notice any advantage in the real gear, or it's really just another way to consume another way to practice it, you know, to apply the knowledge?
Yeah. I mean, I started out like, I guess you call it labbing here, but when I was learning sound, I could read about some new piece of gear in a magazine and like know what it does, but I would go into a warehouse that had that piece of gear and plug it in, turn it on, make sound pass through it. And I would say every time I've done that with any piece of gear, I learn something or have some issue during that experience that I have to figure out. And I don't feel comfortable with that piece of gear, like being hired on a show to go use that unless I've put hands on it. And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to be figuring stuff out on site. But here with the networking stuff, you guys have the virtualization. So for me, it kind of goes back to that. Like, I need to feel confident with the hardware, I think, is a big inspiration. But also with this specific test that I'm studying for right now, I feel like the gear forces me to use the command line, where Packet Tracer, you have the option of just, like, clicking on it and just, like, assigning an IP and the little fill-in gap and, like, all the things you need to do to get it kind of going. You don't have to use the command for it, but I'm pretty sure that's like an important thing to know for the test. So using the hardware forces me to do that, you know, and also I can like have stuff plugged in over on the other side of this room that I'm in here. It's kind of like a hallway. And so I can have it all plugged in far away and be forced to do things sort of in a more realistic fashion, where if I like, you know, turn off the port that I'm connected to or something, it's a problem. Whereas if you do it in Packet Tracer, it's like, you just, you know, reconnect it or whatever. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah. Trying my best, since I'm not getting any real world experience right now, I'm trying my best to emulate, you know, a real world environment and trying to look at it in that way.
I think that's one of the biggest advantages to the physical gear is absolutely. When you're trying to get, you know, that certification and in hopes of getting that first job. If you were interviewing with me and saying, man, I did all this stuff in Packet Tracer. And then the next guy came in just like you, has the same cert, and said, man, I built a home lab and I have enterprise, you know, Cisco routers and switches at home, and this is what I can do in them. To me, it's just another, you have worked on that gear. You know, you're going to come in here and work on similar gear. You know, maybe it's a couple years newer, but it's doing the same stuff. Yeah, that I think that goes a long way. It, in your particular position where you, you want to get that first, you know, gig, do you have any idea when you might take the test? I know that you have a lot of studying ahead of you, and I'm not trying to.
I mean, I definitely hope to have it done by the end of this year. Okay. But also, like, I'm at the point now where when I got to OSPF, I, like, never heard about it before. It's like, okay, it's a new thing. So there's still, I think, more concepts like that that are brand new to me that I'm not sure how long to expect to, you know, spend on them. I want to spend enough time to, like, get it right, you know. So I'm not giving myself a hard deadline anytime soon. But, you know, I think the end of the year is probably realistic.
I feel like there's a lot going on in OSPF, right, AJ? I mean, you just saw the LSA types. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, GRP is a lot easier to me. You get the OSPF, like, oh, man. What is
they,
all this?
They have their use cases for sure. But, it's good. What was I going to ask you? I had the thought on the tip of my tongue.
While AJ's thinking of it, have you hit subnetting yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And do you love it?
I think that was maybe one thing that Net Plus like kind of helped introduce me to. They had some good visual introductions to that kind of stuff, and so it wasn't like just a full on assault of. But
I almost ran away over subnetting, so I'm glad that it's going well for you.
it's not all bad so far.
What's been your favorite topic so far? Is there a topic that you're just like, ooh, this is fun?
I would say spanning tree has been cool to learn for me personally, because having had to work with, you know, IP based networks in high pressure situations and not really understanding them well, I've often had thoughts of like, oh, how could like this redundancy work, or these different setups, like how would you accomplish this? And, you know, now actually reading things like Spanning Tree and Ether Channel and stuff like that, it's like, oh, okay, this is really cool.
Nice.
Yep.
I can't believe you like Spanning Tree.
I mean, you know, I like it as much as we can like this stuff. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Deal with it in a production environment and you'll learn.
Oh, you'll learn.
And what's amazing about it is it just works out of the box, right? Like, you don't really have to do anything too fancy. If it's enabled, it keeps you from destroying your layer two domain. I mean, that's kind of sweet.
I think that's the part of the problem, though, is like, it just works out of the box. And so a lot of engineers won't give it the attention it deserves, because if you don't design it properly or think about it, it can end up biting you in the ass pretty hard.
Right. Mm.
But you're right. Yeah, it'll work out of the box. It can totally stop you from completely foobarring your network.
So you want to be an engineer, right? That's the end goal here. You want to be a network engineer. You're going to go from audio engineer to network engineer. CCNA is going to get you there. You're in a good area, right? There's a lot of technology jobs, I believe, in and around you, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so many. Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's helpful. You know, you're not out in the middle of nowhere with no jobs. Like,
Right.
I wonder how... Like, so AJ, what would you tell somebody who's working on a CCNA and wants to get a job? Like, what can he do besides get the cert between now and then? I mean, would it be like a LinkedIn presence, start connecting with recruiters, you know, talk to Brittany? Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. You're labbing. That's huge, right? Like, getting the experience, even though you don't have a job yet, like getting the experience where you can get it, you know, put yourself in different situations. And if you're looking for some real world scenarios, like, hey, I'm learning Spanning Tree, but, you know, how does a company actually, you know, do this? You know, Andy and I would love to talk to you about that and really let you know how some of that stuff works. But the more experience you can give yourself, the better. And it shows a lot of, like, initiative on your part that, you know, you really want to learn this stuff. Definitely dress up your LinkedIn profile, you know, give it the attention it deserves. Definitely talk to Brittany or somebody like Brittany. You know, there's many Brittanys in the world.
She's our resident recruiter. If you haven't heard her episode yet,
she's a network engineer recruiter, so she'll definitely help.
Oh, wow.
You know, she can help you take your resume and any relevant experience and kind of put that forward on your new resume as a network engineer, right? As a person seeking a network and engineer job.
Awesome.
Yeah, you want to talk to the right people, right? Because like, not all recruiters are created equal. I mean, there could be somebody who looks at your profile and says, hey, you know, I I have this perfect, I saw your profile, you know, you have nothing but networking on your thing. And then they'll email you and say, hey, I think you're this perfect, you know, perfect candidate for, you know, working in an Amazon warehouse, packing boxes. You're like, dude, I got like three CCIs. Like, well, right. But like Brittany's not like that. She's very personable right. and detail oriented. She wants to help you. She contributes to the community. Like connecting with the right people, I think is really helpful. And I personally, just based on my experience, I wouldn't wait until you have your CCNA to to maybe make a couple, you know, relationships with people in the field. Like Brittany as a network engineering recruiter, you know, that could be somebody to just start to have a conversation with, like, hey, this is my plan, end of year. You know, what can I do between now and then? She's been really great.
And even though like we're not doing a ton of stuff in person yet, you know, I would still look. I have to imagine there's like some sort of IT meetup groups. I mean, Atlanta's a huge area. So even if you can get associated with them somehow, you know, I'm a big fan of VMUG. I happen to be a VMUG leader in the area that I live in, and we do virtual events a couple times a year, even now through the pandemic. So I got to imagine there's like something like that. And if you can, you know, we're talking about IT networking, but now we're talking about social networking. And so if you can start to work yourself into those crowds and, you know, talk to people, I'm like, yeah, hey, you know, I was an audio engineer. I lost my job. I'm studying to be a network engineer, working on my CCNA, got my Net Plus, got my A Plus. The next time someone thinks like, you know, oh, I got an entry level job coming up, maybe I should give Bo a call, you know, because that'll go a long way too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about like meetups, industry meetups.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I'm definitely at the point where it's like there were people that I would see all the time trying to break into touring, which is one thing, or just the live entertainment industry alone. People ask me all the time, you know, Uber drivers, how do you get into that? How do you get in? It's like kind of got to know somebody. You know, you got to have at least one person vouch for you. And I feel like I'm at that point with IT where it's like, I can send a million resumes a day online and I'm just going to keep getting these little reminders every day. Like, oh, resume was declined. You know, it's like having somebody in the corner of my room every so often just being like, hey man, you suck. Like, all these emails, you know, it's like, oh, I could only take so many declined resume responses, you know. But that's a great idea, the meetup. I'll definitely need to give that some consideration.
You know what's harder than passing that CCNA is getting that person to give you that first job, that first shot. And if you can, I don't want to like, you know, circle back to the personal branding episode, but if there's any way that you can make a name for yourself before you hit the market, you know, you could write a blog, you could, you know, YouTube videos, whatever that is. But even just your CCNA journey, you know, all of a sudden, let's say you start a blog and, you know, you, one day a week you write about, you know, what you're studying that week and you post it and maybe you put it on LinkedIn and put it on Twitter and start connecting with recruiters and companies. And well, now if it takes you 8 months to get your CCNA, well, you've spent part of that 8 months making connections in the industry and then people can see, oh, he can write and look what he's doing. And oh, and he has a lab and wow, SPF, we use that. And so by the time you hit the market with that CCNA, people know who you are, at least a handful of recruiters. Like, oh, yeah, that dude. Oh, yeah, the music guy, right? As opposed to waiting until you get your CCNA and then starting like, okay, guys, I'm here. Give me a job.
Right.
You know, higher mountain to climb than getting your name out there ahead of time.
Yeah.
Totally. Good advice.
Yeah.
So I got a question. It seems like, hopefully, there's a light at the end of this tunnel. I have seen some artists start to announce some tours later this year, maybe. After everything that you've been through, do you think live entertainment is something you'll go back to, or have you kind of made a decision about that?
And you won't hurt our feelings. You won't hurt our feelings if you're like, I'm bailing on IT as second I can.
No. That's a good question that I don't have a simple answer to. I would say if I got a call today for work, financially, I wouldn't really have an option.
Sure. And you loved what you did, right? So like...
I did.
Yeah.
But there's something to be at the same time, it's easy to look at that job and like form an idea about it. And it's easy to like tell people, oh, it's a great job. But I got to tell you, man, there's times at like 3 a.m. when you're in the arena and you've been up for like nearly 24 hours and you're coiling cable covered in like nacho cheese and just crud, you know, spilt beer, that you're like, man, an office gig, you know. Yeah. Could work out, especially looking down the road. You know, I'm 30 years old now. It's like, I could do this for a little bit longer and enjoy it. But at some point, man, you want to be home. You don't want to, you know, be pulling those long hours doing hard physical work and stuff. And so to answer your question, AJ, I don't really have the option to pigeonhole myself right now.
Sure.
I think the midterm is a little more hazy.
Yeah.
Long term, I need to get a gig in IT and have something settled. And because of that long term sort of need and desire, I think the midterm is going to require that I, you know, focus more and more in getting experience in IT. It's not like I can just tour until I'm 40 and then switch over. You know, it's going to require some of that legwork in the right. in the beginning. So
right,
that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Yeah, you know, that's understandable. I mean, you know, finances obviously play a big part in any decision. So, you know, if you got a call today, you know, answer the call, go work some shows, get some money. But it sounds like you would take that money and put it back into your studies and, you know, pay for the exam and get that certification and keep going that direction.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there like networking internships out there? Like, could he do like a day or two a week while he's studying, like working at a place that lets him do stuff? Like, is that even a thing or not?
I mean, we hired an intern, but I think when most companies think about interns, they turn first to college graduates. I don't think they think about people that aren't affiliated with a college.
Right. They want like a graduate in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you just spent $100,000 on a degree. Come work for free.
Brutal.
Gotta right? love Jokes America. Yeah, exactly.
Brutal. I had a question for you guys too. And thinking about the question that you just asked me, AJ, I was independent, so I could decline jobs or take jobs as I saw fit. Where does that sort of fit in the IT world? Is there a lot of like contract jobs, or is it pretty much like you sign up with a company? And
my first job was contract.
There's tons of 1099 stuff out there for sure.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, definitely talk to, you know, a recruiter, because, and especially Brittany, she says there's a ton of contract work out there. You know, some of them might require clearances or specific, you know, experience or certifications, but there's definitely stuff out there. You know, the company that I work for, we're an integrator, a value-added reseller, a partner, tons of different names for it. But basically, you know, you need gear or you want a solution, you can come to us and we'll help build a custom solution and sell you the appropriate gear that we then go and implement. And I'm the guy that goes and implements. Well, we have, you know, definitely like I'm a staff engineer. I get paid for by the company, but we have a very good handful of engineers that are 1099.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either because that's how they prefer to work as 1099, or maybe they're transferring from another company, so they're 1099 for like 5, 6, 8 months, whatever the case is, and then they become a full-time employee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like a temp gig to a full-time gig. So there's definitely options out there for, you know, either permanent contract, short-term contract, or contract to hire options. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the way the industry hires too. It's contract to perm, right?
Yeah.
Like they want to try you out and see how it is. And then, you know, from your side of the table, Bo, you might want to work at a place, you know, for a little bit before you make a big commitment on like, okay, let's, you know, it's not a nice way to kind of try each other out, right? Like a little, you know, a little dating period. How is this place?
Yeah. And how is this person? I would say if you're at a point in your life where you're open to contract work, I think you're going to have a lot more doors open to you than somebody who's not, you know, like,
oh, wow. That's really, really reassuring and good to hear. Yeah.
I mean, I've come across a lot of opportunities, but it's like, oh, this is it's a contract. And, you know, for me, I have a house, a family, lots of bills. So like, there's a lot of like uneasiness in a contract that's not like guaranteed kind of employment. But
the upside is that the rate is often higher than.
Sure.
So, you know, it might be quote unquote temporary work, but it generally pays, you know, decent, right? I mean, that was my experience, at least.
Do you feel like contract work on your resume like has any different sort of weight as a full-time job?
It's experience, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You're getting experience on production networks. That's what you got to do to,
right?
Because once you get that, in my opinion, you're set. Now you have production experience, and the next place that wants to, you're gonna hit a market without any, you know, production experience. I mean, you're gonna leverage your lab experience, and that's gonna help a lot.
Right.
But that's a much bigger, you know, hill to climb than, oh well, you know, I work 6 month contract at this place, 3 month contract at that. Like, okay, this guy's done the job. He's
sure.
You know, he knows what he's doing. So yeah, contract is a good step into.
I mean, there's There's a website, I think it's like Upwork or something like that, and companies will often post, you know, short-term contract positions like, hey, we have a branch office we're opening up somewhere and we need somebody to go set up, you know, some routers and switches for this new branch office, you know, in a location where they don't have employees, you know, IT employees at work. What was it? Chris Rollet, he had a short-term contract with a company setting up voting stations, you know, back when around the presidential election. And it was, you know, all IP-based, you know, very IT-related stuff. But it was a short-term contract kind of thing.
Nice.
And I guess you got to think outside of the box, too. Like, I've always heard people say, like, you know, your local library, schools, like, they, you know, volunteer work. I'm even thinking, like, if the four of AJ, Dan, myself, if we all lived in the same place and, like, had an office and, like, had a network, you know, for, like, this podcast, if we got big enough, like, dude, we could, like, hire you on as, like, a contractor and be like, hey, man, this is what we need done. Like, you just never know where an opportunity could be, you know? I'd love to hire you and get you some real-world experience if we had that infrastructure in place, you know, in an office. We don't, but there's places out there that, you know, may need your skill set that you may not think of. You know, it might not be Facebook and Google or, you know, Red River right off the get-go, but, you know, different ways to get experience, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We need an office, AJ. We all need to move to San Diego and have an office with a network so we can hire Bo.
I'm sold. I'm sold on that, man. Yeah, you know what? I've done volunteer work for the American Red Cross in an IT capacity. Mm-hmm. And then there's also an organization called ITDRC. And you can sign up with them. And, you know, if a disaster happens in your area or if you're open to traveling, they will take your skill set and match you to a place that needs it. And these guys get donated tons of gear and they will ship gear to a disaster location. And then you got to set up, you know, the switches, the routers, you know, get temporary internet connections, temporary wireless set up. And it's sometimes it serves the local community, you know, so they can get connected with family and let them know they're okay. Sometimes it serves the disaster response personnel. So people working in the area that need to assess the damage, report back, you know, whatever the case may be. So it's a really cool organization, and if you're open to it, you can definitely sign up there. I know with ITDRC, there's a bit of training that you got to do before you're eligible for deployments, but it's not incredibly, you know, difficult training.
Right.
It's kind of cool.
So, are definitely some really good opportunities. I had a great time doing the American Red Cross stuff. I was like the local head of IT, so we set up a bunch of networks for like Red Cross facilities in the state of Vermont. It was all really good experience too.
Was that early on or were you like started up and had prod experience already?
It wasn't like super early on, but I wasn't started up yet. Right. It was definitely like 5 or 6 years ago now.
And I guess volunteer, like they're not going to expect you to be all, you know, hardcore or like super knowledgeable, right? Like you're volunteering.
Right.
You're going to get experience, but that might be a really good foray and, you know, into something.
For sure.
We're going to get you there, Bo.
I know, man. I know it's just like that first job is the hardest one to get. And once that's done, I'll be good. But
But I think you're making a lot of the right moves. But, you know, definitely doing some social networking, getting your name out there. You know, honestly, if a person's not going to give you the opportunity, you probably don't want to work for them anyway. You know, as cool as the job might sound, like you'll find the right person that's going to like stick their neck out for you and give you a chance to prove your worth, and you'll take full advantage of that. You're a hard worker. I can tell that.
Nice. Thanks. I do have, I won't call him out by name. I have one potential lead maybe from the Discord channel in Atlanta. So I think I got to follow up on that this week. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, that's fine too. But
and that's a perfect place too, Bo. We have a jobs channel there. And like we said, there's people who interview and hire in there. I don't know if like 13 or 1400 members now, give or take, but the more places you can get plugged into, you know, whether it's LinkedIn or a blog or YouTube or Twitter, you know, the Discord server has just been, I love it. You know, I see people like hook up in there and get interviews and get jobs. It's just been like, you know, really amazing.
It's nice. Yeah, channel's my favorite.
It's a great community.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Awesome, Bo. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Do you have any last minute words, advice that you would give anybody, you know, in your position?
Are we at the end already?
Yeah.
All right. You want to go another hour, Bo? I mean,
Yeah, no, words of advice. I don't know, man. Study hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hang out with AJ and...
the other guy.
The other dude.
Andy.
Andy. Oh, how did that just happen?
I love it. It's awesome. Yeah. That was my favorite part
Andy,
of it.
They're good dudes.
AJ and that other guy.
That guy that gave you the free stuff.
Yeah. Right, right.
That guy.
No, all right, guys. Well, yeah, cool. Thank you so much for having me on, hey. And certainly we'll be in touch.
Hey, Bo, where can people find you?
Yeah.
Any that. Socials, username and Discord? I mean,
maybe
if anybody,
LinkedIn.
If a recruiter that we know who places people for a living all day, every day.
Anybody that might listen to the podcast that's looking to hire somebody.
Yeah, there's thousands of people listening right now.
Yeah. I'm at Beautoop, BEAUTOOP on Twitter, and Beautoop, that's my name, on LinkedIn. Yep.
And I will drop both of those in the show notes.
Nice.
That way people can easily find you and connect with you, especially if they're looking to hire you.
Yeah. Right on.
Thanks for coming on, Bo. It's been enjoyable for my seat, you know, watching your journey and what you've been through. And, you know, adversity builds character. We've all been through stuff. And, you know, you the only way out is through, right? You're in there, you're in the mud, you're working hard, you're going to get the cert, you're labbing, and, you know, you're going to get rewarded for it. You know, you're doing what you got to do. Everybody who does what you do, you hang in there, you get there, you get a break, and then, you know, you get in there and you'll be a network engineer someday. I still can't believe I'm a network engineer sometimes. So, you know,
that's awesome, man.
You're going to get there. It's been fun following you. Thanks for coming on. Keep us, you know, when you get your CCNA and you get your job, I want an update. I want to hear what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. You'll be the first to know.
We'll do Bo 2 part 2.
Right on. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it. And talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bo. Have a good night.
All right. Later.
Hey, everyone. This is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at ArtOfNetEng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.